Good morning, Nashville. It is Morning Drive on a Friday morning here in Music City, USA. Ryan Porth alongside Derek Mason. Braden Gall out sick today. We hope he starts feeling better. D-Mace, we have a lot to get to this morning. The Titans and the Ravens tomorrow night at M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore. We're going to have coverage from Baltimore later this evening and tomorrow, all brought to you by Wyatt Johnson Ford and Bojangles, Chase McCabe, and Teron Davenport, providing a lot of coverage from Baltimore. So that should be a lot of fun. Divisional round of the playoffs. Not many times we get to say that about the Tennessee Titans in these parts. So this city is uber excited about that one tomorrow night. But before we get to that game, last night the Nashville Predators defeating the Chicago Blackhawks by a score of 5-2. And the storyline out of that game is about an empty net goal. How many times, D-Mace, watching the Nashville Predators over the years, has the storyline been an empty net goal?
Never.
Never?
Never.
But it was last night because Pekka Rinne scored a goal. Pekka Rinne, as Terry Crisp would say, he didn't skate coast to coast. He shot it coast to coast with his back up against the glass, but behind his own goal, launched it 200 feet down ice. He struck bullseye, unlike the guy in the second intermission at the United Center, struck bullseye, and Twitter erupted, the bench erupted, Pekka Rinne erupted in terms of just sheer excitement. Mm-hmm. So cool to see Pekka Rinne have that moment, finally scoring his first NHL goal. He has tried numerous times before in his career. He finally gets one. The first goalie since 2013 in the National Hockey League to score a goal.
Hey, man, he just needs to retire now, man. He's accomplished it all. He needs to retire. He should have just walked off, went to the press conference, and announced his retirement. It's things like that that happen in sports. One, I think, kudos to them on the win. They play much better yet last night than
especially
they did
in the first period.
Yeah, than they did the previous night. So kudos to them for the win. But there are a few things I think that people enjoy, like truly enjoy in sports. In football, we call it the fat guy touchdown. You know, the offensive lineman or the defensive end or tackle, they score a touchdown. I think everybody loves it. Like, everybody just gets, beside themselves when that happens, because you don't want the bigger guys having a ball in their hand. You just don't. But you start to see it more and more in the NFL. I think in basketball, it's that one guy that's always at the end of the bench,
yep,
and he's a fan favorite, and he finally gets in and he scores a point. Everybody go crazy when he gets a block. And then in hockey is the goalie. The goalie gets an opportunity to score a goal, and in this situation, I think the Preds needed some excitement. They needed something to truly cheer for.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, they had that game in hand anyway, but to see Pekka Rinne score at the end, I think, as weird as it might sound, that might be the thing that kind of helped springboard this team.
It could be.
Yeah, something like that.
Not only this team, but it could be Pekka Rinne himself.
Exactly.
I mean, I have never seen him smile that wide in a post-game interview since probably they won the Western Conference back in 2017. Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
He was so excited that he finally scored a goal, because he's been trying it numerous times over the years. Hasn't really come close outside of one instance where I can remember, I think it was a Blues player knocking it down at the blue line, where it looked like it was going to go. With the trajectory that puck was on, it was going to go, but a player, reached up and knocked it down. But Pekka Rinne has gone through a 2.5-month stretch where he has not looked like Pekka Rinne.
Mm-hmm.
And you're wondering whether father time is catching up to him, whether the fact that he's now 37 years old, maybe he's never going to be the same Pekka Rinne that we're used to. Maybe, just maybe. Mm-hmm. We don't know. We won't know probably for another month, because that's probably the period of time that we need to see good play from Pekka Rinne to be convinced that maybe the age isn't catching up to him.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe, just maybe, this moment for Pekka Rinne can be kind of a turning point in his season.
Yeah, it can be because you never know what triggers a guy, you know, in sports. It could be, you know, it could be a, you know, a coach getting on a guy that triggers that guy to play better. It could be another teammate getting on that guy. It could be a game where the guy just, you know, he's in the zone. And then that kind of propels him, you know, for the remainder of the season. I think we, you know, we look no further to you know, the Tennessee Titans and what they did. It, you know, they made some plays, and that started to snowball. A.J. Brown started playing. That started to snowball for him.
Mm-hmm.
And now Pecorine scores a goal. And you know, will he score another goal this season? Probably not. But, you know, I just think that that gives you, in a weird way for a goalie, it gives you some confidence, so to speak. And then he played well last night, too,
sure,
you know, on top of that. So, you know, in a funny way, this could help him in a sense, and this could help the team as well.
Well, it was good last night to see that the Predators didn't let one goal become two goals and then three goals, and then that snowball effect that we've seen happen to them many times in the last month and a half, where a lot of their losses recently, they have let one mistake, one goal, kind of snowball into multiple mistakes, multiple goals, and it costs them points, costs them games. And last night, they were up 3-0, a tremendous first period. They came out guns a-blazing. Victor Arvidsson scores. Colin Blackwell scores his first NHL goal. Matt Duchene, a nice goal on a little mini breakaway all alone. And Pecorine stood tall a lot last night. The Blackhawks really pushed back. In the second half of that game, they held on with a 3-2 lead, and then Nick Bonino scoring an empty net goal. And then Pecorine scoring the empty net goal, the goal we're talking about. We got to hear the radio call and the TV call. Let's start with how it sounded on these airwaves last night with Pete Weber and Hal Gill on the call last night on the Fifth Third Bank Nashville Predators Radio Network. You know, just sheer excitement. Pete Weber has had a lot of legendary calls over the years. And
how do you think it felt for Pete, though, to make that
I mean,
call?
How many times does Pete Weber have to
say Pecorine go?
Yeah, or to call that, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
So Pecorine goal last night, as heard from Pete Weber and Hal Gill.
Hey now, Crawford goes to the bench again. And Rene takes a long, elevated shot, bouncing, and he scores! Pecorine scores into the empty net. Predators with a 5-2 lead. Pecorine becomes the second Predators goaltender in team history to score a goal.
So who was the first?
Chris Mason.
Mace? Oh, my goodness.
But C. Mace didn't shoot the puck down ice.
Oh, I mean, we talked about that a while ago, yes.
He was the last one to touch it.
Yeah.
There was a delayed penalty on the Nashville Predators, and the Coyotes passed the puck down ice into their own empty net.
So can you really credit C. Mace with the goal?
Look, in C. Mace's world, he shot it down the ice. Look, in the box score, when you look back on that game in 2006 between the Preds and the Coyotes at Bridgestone Arena, it looks like a great goal by Chris Mason.
My goodness. I'm pretty sure he's changed the story several different times when he's told it. It's become embellished and even bigger than what it actually was.
Oh, so he always leaves out the fact that Jeff Sanderson passed it into his own net for the Phoenix Coyotes.
That's just a small thing. Just leave that out. Just a small thing.
So, interesting point there, and credit to Pete Weber for being Johnny on the spot within the goal call, saying that Pecorine becomes the second Preds goalie ever to score a goal.
Yeah.
I mean, a true pro like Pete Weber always
he's
on
been
top
here for
it.
He was here for it. So
the Nashville Predators last night became the first franchise in NHL history to have two different goalies score a goal.
Mm.
Now, Martin Brodeur for the New Jersey Devils was notorious for always attempting it. He had three in his career, and all of them were shooting it down the ice from behind the net with an empty net on the other end of the ice. But the Preds, the first time in NHL history that a team has had two different goalies be credited with a goal.
Man. Well, I mean, kudos to Pecorine. You know, that's one of those situations where you see the opportunity and you're like, okay, I'm going to take it. Let me just flick it over and see what happens. I don't think, you know, Chicago thought that Pecorino would shoot the puck, you know, but he did. Why not take a – that's like getting a free touchdown. It's just like, okay, the ball's sitting there. I might as well pick it up and go run. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll pick it up and go run the other way.
Well,
might
see,
as well.
It's rare for you to have this opportunity because goalies aren't really going to try it when it's a one-goal game. You know?
Yeah.
When they're only up by one with the empty net, they're not going to try something like that typically. But when it's two goals and the net is still empty, they might try it, but they have to have the capability of being accurate with it down ice and also have the opportunity of having no one else around them, have the puck by themselves behind the net and just fling it down ice. And that's what Pecorino had last night. So we heard the radio call. The TV call with Chris Mason on the call alongside our own Willie Donick, Chris Mason being the other goalie that has scored in Preds history, their reaction was absolutely priceless. Let's hear what it sounded like on Fox Sports Tennessee last night.
Crawford will go to the bench again. Rene will try. Rene going deep for the empty net. It is bouncing!
Unbelievable.
That was...
Oh, he's been trying that a couple of times over the last few years.
Willie Donick and Chris Mason last night on the TV call.
Oh, my goodness. That's one of those things, you know, they didn't expect. And
I screamed
at
home.
Exactly. They were more... I think they showed more excitement. See, Pete is cool with his. You know, Pete just, because he threw out a stat, too. Pete is always controlled. He's always measured. But is there's excitement in his measurement. Those two crazos, it's just like,
Sounded like the Tampa Bay Lightning
exactly.
Radio team.
High-fiving one another. Great. Again, the Nashville Predator fans, they needed something to cheer
Sure.
and about. And the goal might seem small in the world of hockey, but I think for the Nashville Predators, it was a little bit bigger than that. So kudos to them.
So you're equating a goalie goal to fat man touchdown in
Absolutely.
Football.
Absolutely, yeah.
The end of the bench guy, let's say in college basketball, the walk-on for whatever college basketball team, you're up by 30 points, you're put in there in the last 60 seconds, and you drill a three-pointer.
Exactly.
All right, we have that for basketball. For baseball, it has to be the pitcher home run, right?
Yeah.
Specifically, the Bartolo Colon home run.
Well, you think like, man, there's no way, no how, no chance he's going to hit a home run, and he just knocks it out of the park.
And then he takes about 45 seconds to round the bases. This is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game, alongside Derek Mason, former Titan and Raven great Derek Mason. I'm Ryan Porth. And speaking of the Titans and the Ravens, tomorrow night that rivalry is renewed at M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore. How big of a role does Ryan Tannehill have in trying to pull this upset for the Tennessee Titans? We will get to that next. He's D. Mace. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Morning Drive live on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth alongside Derek Mason. Braden Gall out sick this morning. So tomorrow night, 7:15 Central Time, M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore, the Tennessee Titans, the 6th seed, the Baltimore Ravens, the 1 seed, getting after it in the divisional round of the playoffs. And D-Mace, before we get into Ryan Tannehill, you have played in all three playoff games between these two teams.
Yes.
The one that you really don't want to talk about, and then two that you will
gladly talk about.
With the Titans win in Baltimore and the Ravens win here in Nashville back in 2009. It was the 2008 season. But
yes,
early
2009 playoffs.
Correct. So a rivalry renewed. I think that's more for the fans. I don't know how much that really matters at the end of the day, but if history is correct about this, it's going to be a tough game, hard-nosed, and you know, you're really going to have to bring your lunch pail to work tomorrow night.
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to this team has played 23 times, I believe. And I've been in all but four, I believe, and this would be the fifth one out, or all but three, and this would be the fourth one. And I understand both sides, you know, of it. And there's only, you know, one or two other people that can share that insight. The late great Steve McNair, who, you know, was in here with me for my 8 years here, and then the year after I got there, he ended up coming in, and then Samari Rowe. I basically played with Samari my whole career, and he played with me his whole career, because he ended up retiring after leaving Baltimore because of his neck.
That was his last season. When the Ravens,
yeah, when
you guys came here and broke every Titans fan's heart, including mine,
yeah,
with the ugly 13-10 win, whatever it was, that was Samari's last season.
Yeah,
right.
It was last season playing.
Right.
He was still on the roster, but he was dealing with injuries, so he wasn't able to get back on the field. So, you know, Samari is the only guy that can kind of give those insights of both sides, both coaches and even John. But I think the guys now on either side, other than maybe was Sam Cook, he wasn't there to punter for Baltimore. I don't think he was there. He might have came the year after we played Tennessee. So, and then Marshall Yanda, he might have been the year after, too. But there's no one on that team, I don't believe, other than John, that can say they were a part of that playoff game. There's nobody on the Titans team that can say that they were part of that playoff game. Now, there are people within the organization, you know, people within the, you know, like Hoss and Joey, guys that are a part of the equipment team, great guys who've been there for the longest, they were a part of it, and a few other guys. But as far as the guys on the field, I don't think those guys were a part of it. So they don't have anything to – they don't have a reference point. So when you ask Mike Vrabel, he says, I don't – that's nothing that we worry about,
sure,
you know, because we can't – there's nothing tangible that we could take from that game because we were not a part of it.
I mean, all the history being discussed this week is all – from the fans, from the media, doesn't matter to this game. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow night, it's about Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry against Lamar Jackson and the rest of that fantastic Ravens offense and defense. Mm-hmm. This is the best team in the National Football League really all season long. They haven't lost since the month of September, if you can believe that. And it's going to be a tall task for this Tennessee Titans team to repeat what they did last week in Foxborough. And a lot of people are pointing to Ryan Tannehill as needing to be kind of that X factor and difference maker for this Titans team, because you would expect the Ravens to do everything they can to slow down Derrick Henry and force Ryan Tannehill to beat them.
Yeah, I think that's what they want to do. I don't think New England wanted to do that in the sense of they didn't play the defense to stop Derrick Henry.
They also didn't want to tackle Derrick Henry.
Yeah, after a while, they didn't want to tackle him neither. But I think everybody just figured that Bill Belichick was going to try to stop Derrick Henry. And I think he probably outsmarted himself, because he thought that they would just be able to, you know, get him down and tackle him, you know, playing two safety high. That's not what you're going to do. You can't beat the Tennessee Titans, or you can't stop Derrick Henry with having both of your safeties high. You got to trust that your secondary does the job. And then I think when Chung went out, that really kind of put a damper or stress on what they probably wanted to do later in the game. He's going to have to prove that he can throw against a secondary that is arguably the best in the NFL. When you're talking safeties, Earl Thomas, he's a Hall of Famer. You're talking two all-pro corners, a third corner that's really good, and Jimmy Smith. Nickel guys that are good. The other safety is pretty good, too. And then they got guys that can rush the passer. So what happened to the Titans last year, a lot of these guys were part of that team. And, you know, they went against Derrick Henry when Derrick Henry started picking up steam last year, and they were able to neutralize Derrick Henry. They're going to look back at that game and say, okay, what did we do to stop Derrick Henry? I don't think they fear Ryan Tannehill throwing a football. I really don't. I don't think they fear those. They respect A.J. Brown. They respect Corey Davis, but they don't fear those two guys. If you watch New England very closely, I don't think New England feared A.J. Brown either. I think they were more worried about Corey Davis than they were A.J. Brown, because a lot of times, I said this yesterday, a lot of times Gilmore went to Davis. Why? Because Davis is the better route runner. A.J. Brown, he's still learning. So they figured we'll be okay. Just don't let him get over the top of you. But this is the guy, Davis, we got to cover because he's a true route runner. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to get separation, that those wide receivers. And they hadn't got separation all season consistently. So what makes you think they're going to get separation against this team? You know, and Ryan's going to have to be pinpoint accurate this time. And he has been this season.
Not only that, but the pass protection is going to have to be off the charts, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And they've done a fabulous job, this offensive line, at run blocking. Mm-hmm. I mean, other than the Baltimore Ravens and maybe San Fran, they have been the best run blocking team in the National Football League the last half of the season.
And I don't think we give them enough credit for that.
No, we don't.
And we were collectively railing on them late in the preseason when Roger Saffold looked like, you know, a fish out of water.
We called him Big Rod.
Yeah. When he looked like Andy Levitre 2.0. And then before Taylor Lewan came back from his suspension, and really in the few games after that, we were very critical of that offensive line, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. But really, like you said, in the second half of this season, once Taylor Lewan stopped taking dumb penalties on a consistent basis, once Nate Davis kind of learned the NFL and wasn't, you know, this bright-eyed rookie anymore, once the chemistry was there, this offensive line has been plowing defensive lines consistently here in the last 2 months.
Well, that's what they were built for. This is why they went out and got Conklin. This is why they went out and got Roger Saffold. Roger Saffold was one of the best guards blocking last year with the Rams. He wasn't as good pass blocking, but he was good run blocking. This is why they went out and got these particular guys, Nate Davis, because the Titans want to run in football. That's what they want to do in play action. And the offensive line has been superb in run blocking. But just when we thought the problems had been fixed, fast forward and watch the game against New Orleans. Those problems are still there. And the last thing the Tennessee Titans want to do is get in the passing fest because they know those problems that they thought they fixed are not fixed. They're just masked because they're running the football so well and they don't have to pass.
Right. This is a game where they're going to want to control the ball 35, 40 minutes if they absolutely can.
Yeah.
I mean, the best defense against that Ravens offense is keeping them off the field.
Yeah, you got to keep Lamar. You got to keep Lamar on the bench. I don't get this. You know, and maybe it's just wishful thinking for Nashville Predators. That too.
Yes.
But Tennessee Titan fans, that all of a sudden the Baltimore Ravens forgot how to play football because they had a week one bye. They needed the bye. They needed the rest. John Harbaugh, believe me, he's going to have this team ready to go. They are. It's just, it is what it is. So don't bank. I don't want the Titan fans to bank on this team being rusty or, you know, they had a week off, so it's going to. No, don't bank on that. If y'all banking on that, y'all going to have a long, y'all going to be disappointed in the end. And don't look back at last year's playoff game with the Baltimore Ravens. They had Marty Morningwig, a different system. And when they allowed Lamar to be Lamar in the second half, he almost brought them back single-handedly. They almost won that game. And it just time ran out. So stop looking at what happened to Lamar last year in the playoffs. Don't take into it. Don't say, well, they've been off for a week. No, none of that matters. What matters is what the Titans do or what they don't do. It has nothing to do with Baltimore being off for a week or them losing last year in the playoffs. That has no relevance to what's going to happen tomorrow.
Chase McCabe is headed to Baltimore later today. I'm sorry for the city of Baltimore that the constable is invading your territory. But he'll be on with Teron Davenport, Chase and TD tonight from 6 to 8 live from Baltimore. And then again tomorrow from 12 to 2 as part of our 10 hours of pregame coverage before the Titans and the Ravens kick off at M&T Bank Stadium up there in Baltimore. And all of our coverage from Baltimore tonight and tomorrow brought to you by Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford, and Bojangles. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com. Coming up next, big news yesterday in Knoxville. Trey Smith is coming back. Josh Ward of WNML in Knoxville will join us. That's all coming up next on Morning Drive. He's D-Mace. I'm Ryan Porth in for Brayden Gall this morning on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into the show on this Friday morning. Morning Drive. Ryan Porth in for Brayden Gall this morning. He is out sick. We hope he starts feeling better. Alongside former NFL receiver of the Titans and the Ravens, Derek Mason. This is Morning Drive, joined now by Josh Ward of WNML in Knoxville. Josh, big news yesterday on the Hill. Trey Smith returning for his senior season. Were you surprised by that news yesterday?
I was a little surprised. If you had asked me a week ago then if this would happen, then my answer today would be of greater surprise. But there were some rumblings over the last few days that, hey, Trey is really considering staying at Tennessee, and obviously that's what he announced. It's massive news for Tennessee, so it elevates the excitement level. And I think a lot of Tennessee fans had spent most of the season expecting that this was the final year they would see Trey Smith play for Tennessee. And at one point, Trey probably thought that this would be his final season. But based on what the NFL Draft Advisory Committee told him, and I think conversations with medical staff members, I think all of that added up to Trey deciding, you know what, why don't I take another shot of a year in college, prove what I can do, improve my draft stock, and show NFL teams that they should take me in the first round, maybe high in the first round next year. So Trey has decided to kind of bet on himself getting better and improving in a number of areas when he's already a really good player. So it's really good for Tennessee, and it could potentially work out to be a really good move for Trey Smith.
Absolutely. It could be a really good move for him, as well as, you know, the offensive line, which Jeremy Pruitt has been trying to, you know, piece together since he's gotten there. He got 2 5-star guys last year that were freshmen, and now they're going to be sophomores. And to add Trey Smith back to the fold, Brandon McKinney, hopefully he comes back, and then they get the transfer, Chad Mays out of Georgia. This should be, and tell me if you see it this way too, Josh, this should be the best offensive line and the deepest offensive line this team has had in some years.
No doubt. You go back to that line in 2012-13 where they had Juwan James and Zach Fulton, Tiny Richardson, James Stone. It was a group that was really good and had several guys that are still in the NFL and have been for the last few years. That was a really good group. This is a group that potentially could get to that level and be even better. And it's also so important to get Trey Smith back, not just because he's a really good player, and he will be next season, will be a better player next season. He helps guys like Wanya Morris and Darnell Wright, K'Ron Calvert, Brandon Kennedy there in the interior. To have that base on the inside of the offensive line, it can kind of take some pressure off guys who were still expecting to be really good, because Wanya needs to get a lot better, and he knows that. Jeremy Pruitt has talked about that. They have to improve, but they have a better chance to do that with Trey Smith continuing to set the tone on the offensive line and being able to spend more time in the offseason working with those guys, because he didn't get to do that this past offseason. So a full offseason of training and practicing this year compared to less time a year ago. Darnell came in the summer, remember, so he will go through his first full offseason with Tennessee. It just gives Tennessee's offensive line a chance to get to an even higher level. And then if Cade Mays is granted a waiver and he is able to play right away for Tennessee, well, we're talking about one of the best offensive lines in the SEC, because all of a sudden you have a really experienced guy who has proven that he can play at a high level at Georgia at a number of positions. He could play tackle, he could play guard, so the versatility helps as well.
Yeah, it does. And then I think it helps the quarterback, because you're losing guys – skill guys at the receiver position, and now you all of a sudden you were this veteran team at that position, at the wide receiver position, and now you become a young team. And with having that offensive line hopefully solidified, it takes a lot of pressure off whoever the quarterback is going to be to try to get the ball down the field. Now they can run the ball as opposed to trying to throw it.
Yeah, I think you should expect more chemistry in a number of areas. A guy like Eric Gray coming back for a sophomore season, there should be more confidence. He should be better in pass protection, which was a concern as the season has gone along. And by the way, Eric Gray probably enjoyed the announcement yesterday that Trey Smith is back and that Cade Mays is joining the team again. There's the question right now, will he be eligible to play? So that's an unknown. But you'll have the quarterback competition, and we don't know who the starter will be right now. I would handicap Jarrett Garantano as the favorite to be the starter, but I'm saying that now in January, there's a spring and summer to still go, plus fall camp. So that can obviously change. But Tennessee's quarterback position should be better next fall, right? And the offensive line, its ability to protect, its ability to run block at a higher level should help a number of areas in the offense, which is important because replacing Juwan Jennings and Marquez Callaway, Donwood Anderson as well, is not going to be a small task. They have pieces to help do that, and Josh Palmer on the outside is a nice starting point, but getting stronger in the other areas will help with the losses of a couple of really key pieces.
Josh Ward of WNML in Knoxville with us here on Morning Drive. Josh, how does kind of the 1-2 punch of Cade Mays transferring to Knoxville and Trey Smith coming back to Knoxville kind of change your outlook of the 2020 season for the Vols?
Well, without those guys, I think the offensive line, while we still could have talked about potential with a number of players, how they could play, I think we would have gone into next season with the offensive line being one of the big question marks, because we would have been asking, well, how much better is Wanya Morris going to be? How much better will Darnell Wright and Calvert and Jerome Carvin be? And are they going to have enough depth? Is Jackson Lampley ready? Is Chris Ocperogano ready? Those would be big questions. Now we talk about guys that you know can be the leaders of the offensive line. And having Brandon Kennedy back, a senior, a six-year guy there at center, that you get back to the connection with the quarterback. You have that as well. That all of a sudden makes the offensive line a strength. And the defensive line, I think, can be one of Tennessee's strengths heading into the season when that has been one of the biggest question marks entering the last couple of seasons for Tennessee. It's a line of scrimmage league. So I could put it as simply as, if you feel really good about what you have along the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, you feel a lot better about your chance to compete in the SEC. Now, do you have enough depth and enough overall talent to go beat teams like Florida, Georgia, Alabama, because you have to play them every year? Let's find out. Early on in the season, Tennessee plays at Oklahoma and Florida at home. So in the month of September, we should get a really good idea if Tennessee has taken a big step from winning games at the end of the season against some lesser competition to now being ready to go compete against the best teams in the SEC, because Tennessee will go into 2020 talking about trying to win the SEC East for the first time since 2007, and they'll get the chance early on to show if they have a really good shot.
Yeah, they do, Josh. Now, we talked to you right after the bowl game where Tennessee beat Indiana. In the fourth quarter, they came back and won that game. What has been since then, and since we've talked to you, what has been the feeling of this program after that win? Is the fans still on the high, or have they moved on to college basketball, even women's basketball? They're doing really good. I think they're ranked 25th in the country right now. Or are people still stuck on football and just can't wait to get more of what's going on?
Yeah, fans are eating up football right now. They're riding the wave. And, you know, it's funny, this week getting Trey Smith back and adding Cade Mays, I bet a lot of Tennessee fans, heck, Jeremy Pruitt, might have traded a win in the bowl game to get those guys for the 2020 team. It turns out they didn't have to make that trade. They got the win in the bowl game. You add Cade Mays to the roster. Trey Smith comes back. A receiver, Velus Jones, who at least adds some depth and can help in special teams, he announces that he's transferring to Tennessee as a grad transfer. A lot of things just are going in a positive way. Tennessee did lose running backs coach David Johnson to Florida State, which was a disappointment. But Tennessee has money and is an attractive spot right now, so it can go out and hire a good coach to replace him. Fans right now are all in, and this, again, is added to the difference in the conversation we had back in September and October when the mood was not great among Tennessee fans. It's in a much better place right now.
Josh Ward of WNML in Knoxville every Friday at 6:30 here on Morning Drive. Josh, thank you so much for joining us today.
You got it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville. Big news yesterday. Mm-hmm. Trey Smith going back to Tennessee and Cade Mays transferring there from Georgia, I think, is really going to provide a shot in the arm for that offense
I
in
think
2020.
So. I really do think so. I think they go from being, a team that was sort of on the outside looking in was going to be good to one of the favorites in the East. Now, will they – do they have enough to beat Florida and Georgia? We don't know. But at least they have, you know, they're starting off in the right direction with getting Trey back, getting Chad Mays, some other guys that are another year in that program. I think they are taking steps forward to getting this team back on track, this program back on track.
I would be interested to see if a really good quarterback in college football enters the transfer portal, if that now becomes a more attractive place for a quarterback wanting out of a current situation that he's in, saying, look, this is a great offensive line, a great collection of running backs for the Vols. Yeah, you're going to have some new receivers, but could be an opportunity to win eight or nine games.
Yeah, it could be. You know, I'm pretty sure Jeremy Pruitt is keeping his door wide open to situations like that, in particular the quarterback situation.
Coming up next, we'll get back to the Titans and Ravens, but first, Mike Leach in the SEC. Derek and I and everybody else who loves college football in the SEC are really excited about that. We'll touch on that coming up next. He's Derek Mason. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth in for Brayden Gall this morning alongside Derek Mason, D-Mace. And before we get back into the Titans and Ravens, yesterday, some great news for college football and SEC fans all together, with Mike Leach stepping off a plane and having a cowbell in his hand as he arrives in Starkville, Mississippi, to be the new head coach of the Mississippi State Bulldogs.
Man, listen, you can't ask for a round of coaching hires in the SEC. I just tell you, you get Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach in the same year.
In the state of Mississippi.
Exactly. Like, gosh, like the football gods look down on the SEC. The football gods look down on anybody that follows the SEC, because you're going to get philosophy 501, not one-on-one. You're going to get 501 with Mike Leach, and he's going to break down. If you bring up the pencil in his head and it's like on the side of his ear, he's going to break that down and how it all came about.
He
the first person that put a pencil in their ear, he will break it down.
Or he will break down how pencils became from number one to number two.
Absolutely.
He'll
and
give
who
you
doesn't
the history
hear
of
that?
The number two pencil.
Yeah, who doesn't want to hear that?
What I really want to hear from Mike Leach is his breakdown of who would win a battle between the SEC mascots. Now, while he was at Washington State, he was asked who would win a battle of the Pac-12 mascots. And then he automatically kind of deferred to the Cougars that they'll find a way. But he was really high on the Buffalo and really high on the Ute. You know, he wanted Harry Potter to figure out the Sun Devil, figure out what's going on there. It depended on whether the Trojan was on a horse or by foot. You know, the tree with Stanford, he says it depends on whether there's a bird in the tree. I really want to hear his breakdown of the SEC mascots and who would win a battle between them, between all 14.
I would love to hear it. I think everyone in the SEC would love to hear it. This is just, you know, he goes from Pullman to Mississippi State. Was it
Starkville? So he's gone from Lubbock, Texas, to Pullman, Washington, to Starkville, Mississippi.
All of these smaller type towns that I think fit him. This is where I don't think he wants to be in like some big city. I think he thrives being in these smaller cities. That really, you know, look at their college football team, and they love their college football team.
But also, they don't have a ton of pressure where he can be him. He doesn't have the pressure of winning double-digit games every single year. And he can have the air raid offense, win 7, 8, 9 games a year, and he's looked upon fondly in that town.
Exactly. As long as he beat Ole Miss, then I think they will be fine.
Leach versus Lane in the Egg Bowl.
Oh, I can't wait to see that this year. But he gives you, I think he's a high-profile coach that's going to give your program the needed attention. not too much, just enough to keep you there with everyone else. It's going to be a tough task, a tall task for him in the West, but they're not looking for him to come in and beat Ed Orgeron or Nick Saban. They're not looking for that.
They're not going to like the results if they are looking for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you and Braden yesterday kind of equated this to, or equated Mississippi State to Vanderbilt just a few years ago when mm-hmm. James Franklin left, and all of a sudden expectations were higher on West End.
Exactly.
When Dan Mullen was at Mississippi State, they reached unprecedented heights with mm-hmm. Dan Mullen and Dak Prescott at quarterback. And I don't think you can realistically expect Mississippi State to be that good every single year.
No, you can't. And if you are, you're fooling yourself. You're just setting yourself up for failure. You're setting yourself up to look for a coach, another coach in another 3 or 4 years. I think that's what the problem was with Vandy, where the fans all of a sudden start to look at Vandy as if they've been winning 10 games for the last 20, 30, 40 years, and it hadn't been that way. They caught lightning in a bottle with one coach. And, you know, you take it as it is. And the next coach, yes, you want to win that many games, but realistically, are you going to win that many games? History says no. Well, Mississippi State could, hopefully they don't fall into that same trap. Dan Mullen had that program, and he's had every program that he's been to, just about, on levels either they are accustomed to or they hadn't been to. And when he left, I think people just all of a sudden just figured we should stay at that level. Well, no, it doesn't work that way. But I think Mike Leach, he will give you 7, 8, maybe with the bowl game, 9 wins. Mm-hmm. And for Mississippi State, that might be, realistically, that might be good enough, because now, you know, you had Ed Orgeron, who has that LSU program back where it needs to be. You have Gus Malzahn, who has that quarter, you know, that the Auburn program back with their quarterback. And then obviously Alabama, they ain't going nowhere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now you got to find out, where do I slot 4 through whatever.
4 through 7.
Exactly.
Think of the SEC West. You've got Saban, Malzahn, Edo. You've got Jimbo Fisher. You've got Lane Kiffin. Mm-hmm. You've got Mike Leach. And then you've got Sam Pittman over here in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Sam loves it. He's just over here by himself.
This is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I really want Mike Leach to be asked at SEC Media Days in Atlanta to break down the SEC mascots. That would be just fantastic.
If somebody doesn't ask him that question, shame on them. Shame on them.
You know what? It might be asked before then.
Yeah.
Probably at spring practice sometime.
I hope so.
He'll have the full breakdown of that. But tomorrow night, Titans-Ravens at M&T Bank Stadium, and the Ravens are 9.5, 10-point favorites in this game. A lot of people just expect the Ravens to handle the business and, you know, not giving the Titans as much chance to win this game as they may have going into the game against New England. But I do think the Ravens need to be cognizant of this Titans team and not overlook this team, because if they overlook this team and start to get ahead of themselves or full of themselves, saying, you know, we're going to the Super Bowl, or it's a lock that we're at least going to host Houston or KC in the AFC Championship game, this is not a Titans team you can do that to. Maybe 2 years ago, mm-hmm. when the Titans went into New England, you knew going into that game their season was about to be over.
Yeah.
Going into that game against the Patriots. I kind of feel like the Titans have a fighter's chance if multiple things go their way in this game against the Ravens.
Yeah, they need a few things to go their way. They need Derrick Henry to run the way he has been running. They need the defense to step up even bigger than what they did last week, because last week was tailor-made for them. New England has, if you watch New England closely, they were a shell of themselves offensively. They were not going to threaten anyone. The only reason why they end up being 12-4 and look the way that they look at times is because they were in a bad division and they had Tom Brady. Everything else, they took a step back when they lost a lot of receivers and they lost Gronk before the beginning of the season. So that team was the shell of themselves offensively. But the Titans still did what they needed to do and they went down. That's not their fault. They went down there to handle business. This is a different situation. This is a different animal. They're going to have to be even better on defense. Ryan Tannehill, he's going to have to complete more passes. The receivers are going to have to get off tight coverage. You know, I don't mind you know, people, when you look at Baltimore, they're saying, well, they're looking forward to the Super Bowl. No, they're not looking ahead, but they are on a mission, just like the mm-hmm. Titans are on a mission. Mm-hmm. This team is on a mission, too. They're not looking ahead past Baltimore, but their ultimate goal is to get to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl. That poster is on the wall. It's there for everybody to see every time they walk by it. They know it's there, but they know they got to play a game this weekend. Baltimore knows the Super Bowl's there, but they know in order to get there, they got to beat the Tennessee Titans. So I've heard this, oh, they could be looking past. They're not looking past the Tennessee Titans. And the Titans aren't looking past the Baltimore Ravens.
Jayon Brown ruled out for the Titans. How big is that for this
huge.
Game?
It's going to be huge. You know, Jayon Brown he's an up-and-coming young linebacker. He's one of the better young linebackers in the NFL. To me, you know, from a defensive standpoint, what he can do for that defense, he's so versatile. He can, if they need him to rush the passer, he's become bigger in stopping the run. He can cover, and not having that is going to be a big loss for them because now they got to bring somebody from the secondary to try to spy on Lamar Jackson. I'm not saying that, you know, he was going to be able to chase him down but he was going to be able to be in a position. Mm-hmm. And if he takes the right angle, he can get Lamar down. But now not to have him, that's a big blow.
Coming up next, Derek has a dissection of Ryan Tannehill's performance against the New England Patriots on Wild Card Weekend. We'll get to that next on Morning Drive. I'm Ryan Porth in for Brayden Gall this morning alongside D-Mace. This is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.